Welcome to WITCAST, the podcast of the Women Inside Trade Network, an international organization that contributes to the empowerment of women and seeks to address a gender gap that still exists in Brazil and in the world when it comes to international trade. In this episode of WITCAST, we are going to talk about the recent developments of the two mega trade agreements, the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, the CPTPP, and the Asian Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, the RCEP. We saw news on countries such as the UK, the United States, and China talking about joining the CPTPP, and these two agreements may bring a lot to think on the future of international trade regulation. To discuss this topic, we will have the pleasure to bring the trade expert and professor of the University of Columbia, Mr. Petros Mavroids. Petros is Dr. Juris by the University of Heidelberg in Germany, and he served as a member of the Legal Affairs Division and as a legal advisor to the WTO. So, Petros, it's a pleasure to have you here in our podcast. To talk about this so important issue that are basically the two biggest agreements that we have right now being discussed everywhere, the RCEP and the CPTPP. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Obrigadíssimo por o convite.
So my first question to you to begin with would be to have an overview of both agreements, because we know they are being implemented among Asia-Pacific countries, and they have new rules on international trade that go beyond the traditional WTO rules. So could you draft a small parallel between the two agreements?
Let me put it like this. I'll make three short observations. Then if you want more, I can speak more. There is a striking difference, my first sentence, between the two agreements, because TPP, to a large extent, was driven by the Barack Obama administration to come up with a set of rules that would constrain China without China influencing the content. That was the idea. Whereas RCEP, China participates from day one in the negotiation, along with other Southeast Asian countries. And you can imagine, they don't go nowhere near as, nowhere as far as TPP when disciplining state-owned enterprises, for example. There are some similarities, but there are some striking differences as well. So I don't think they look alike. My second observation is, if I look for similarities, the similarities are all these agreements, they have one thing in common. They go beyond what you have in the WTO. So in 2010, 11 years ago, with Andrés Sapir, who was my former professor, and my permanent co-author, Henrik Horn, we mapped a series of FTAs. Say, why do people sign free trade areas when duties are close to zero? Why do you need free trade areas? And then we realized that what they needed much more, because they want to negotiate behind the border measures, which are normally not protectionistic, rather than reduce protection vis-a-vis some partners. And the reason, I think, is it is very difficult to negotiate across 164 countries, which are more and more heterogeneous. By accident, I followed, let's make a short footnote to my second point. I followed a negotiation before the WTO where I was invited to speak. And the delegate of Brazil, he made one simple, very powerful point, since I'm speaking to Brazilians. He was exasperated and he turned and he told everybody, look, we are here because we want to liberalize trade. If you don't share this basic objective, why are we under the same roof? And I think that's what drives a number of FTAs. And my third short sentence is, TPP is not only, if you wish, more daring than RCEP, but also much more innovative. I was honestly impressed by the way, forget now SOEs, the way they negotiate dispute settlement. The provisions on dispute settlement, selection of panelists, the kind of people you have in the roster for chairs, these are unheard of in the WTO. I'm a chair, and I'm not. I have a Swiss passport. We're not parts of the CPTPP. They have a number of people like me, not just me. I mean, this is unheard of in WTO. So, in one sentence, I would say TPP goes further, faster, more innovative, and probably a better example for eventual changes in the WTO.
Okay. So thank you, Petros. It was really great to hear you. And now, as you said, RCEP is an agreement between the big three in Asia, China, Japan, and South Korea, and their practicing international trade influenced the RCEP rules. So although the RCEP was concluded after the CPTPP, its rules are timid on issues such as e-commerce and sustainable development, issues that have been advancing more and more in trade agreements and in the WTO. Is it far from curious the fact that China is a major player in both subjects and thus the RCEP could have contributed to advance international discussions on this topic? Is it an elephant in the room? What is your view on this?
When I read your question, I have to say, I mean, it made me rethink a couple of things I'm working on right now for the IMF. You know, I think now, don't take these things very seriously. Yeah? This is my views are my views, and here we discuss about something totally subjective. I think if you position yourself and you say, I'm now China, I'm the Chinese government, I want to keep the WTO alive because I'm an export-led growth economy. I make most of my money by exporting. I don't want WTO to disappear. That's clear. Two, I'm a big power and I can dictate terms when I'm alone. Best example, OBOR, one belt, one road. I go one on one. I take from Egypt to Pakistan to you name it, and I impose my terms. And now somewhere in between, I have RCEP, which is neither WTO nor a one-on-one relationship. Now, what would be my negotiating card in RCEP? And China has this problem. I think the best way to understand RCEP is if you compare the Chinese position in the WTO and in One Belt, One Road, and then you see that RCEP is neither here nor there. When they do one-on-one, you will find nothing on e-commerce or very few things to the extent that they shoot China, almost nothing on environment. In the WTO, they participate in the e-commerce negotiation. Yes, but so do 80 something other WTO members, and we're nowhere near the end. And I have to accept and give it to China. China was one that made most of the commitments on the agreement on environmental goods. China opened up a lot, but this is an agreement which is not implemented as we speak. Now, in RCEP, the chapter on environment, again, when you compare it to CPTPP, there is a big difference. I'm sorry. I mean, no matter how you view things, I mean, the CPTPP guys, first of all, they start from a different, it's true, there are some common members, New Zealand and so on, Australia, blah, blah, that's true. But there are some uncommon members. I mean, Brazil is not Vietnam. Brazil has a different level of protection in a number of those fields. So you start from a different baseline than a number of members, Asian countries and so on and so forth. So I see, I don't think it is so, if you wish, weird that we see an RCEP the way it is, because China is unclear as to what its optimal strategy is, and its partners are not necessarily all of them the most advanced economies. Claro.
Do you think, just a follow-up question on that, do you think the rules of origin could be like the cherry on the RCEP agreement because it put all countries in the same table, in trade flow, so to speak?
That's what a number of the negotiators I speak to for RCEP, most of them come from New Zealand and Australia. That's what they mention all the time. But you know, even there you have two problems. One of them is rules of origin for goods. Let's say more or less we come up with an agreement, but services, Pandora's box. And the second problem is, if the rules of origin are supposed to be preferential, they will be if RCEP is, because RCEP is not in force as we speak, we still wait for the signatures. But if they're preferential, they should go beyond what you have in the WTO, no? If they go, if they're less of a commitment, I will apply the WTO rules. Nobody will want to apply RCEP. Well, to go beyond what you have in the WTO, you must overcome all the problems that you have faced in the WTO. Again, by accident, there's a Brazilian guy, Darlan, who is working on rules of origin in the WTO. And I interviewed this guy a number of times. And the long and the short of our discussions is we are miles apart in bridging the gap on a series of areas concerning criteria, forget no specific fields, criteria on rules of origin. I don't have too much hope. I mean, I think maybe you will see something in a few sectors, but the cross the board agreement, let's wait a little bit and let's hold our breath for now.
Perfect. Thank you. So then I would like to work on the both agreements, asking you, I mean, we see the CTPP with Asian and American countries, the RCEP, mainly Asian countries, but they both represent a very relevant share of the world's GDP and trade and investment flow. We know the US left, but we saw the UK saying they want to be part of CPTPP. We don't know how this is going to go, but they formally said that. And the RCEP is also open to accession for new members. I guess they're still waiting for India possibly, and they are open for others. So my question for you is that, what way these both agreements, these two agreements, could be a potential influence for international rules going beyond WTO rules, meaning that they could take space from international regulation at the WTO? Do you see this possibility and together with this, an increase of trade diversion and a regionalization of value chains that come with the agreement? To be part of the agreement and against countries that are out?
I think this is an excellent question. And the important thing is that we ask the correct questions. No, not the answers change over time, but the question is, can I come up with the right questions? And I think in this question, this should be the heart of the discussion. I mean, again, I'll give you three responses because there are three overlapping issues. The first point is, let's start with the simpler of the three, because the last point, as you'll see, it's a very complicated issue, in my view at least. The first point is the trade diversion point. Now, to the extent we discuss behind the border measures, there should be no trade diversion, because whatever you do in RCEP or TPP, you apply it across the board to everybody. By virtue of behind the border measures, have to observe MFN, end of the story. And this is clear. Now, of course, it's clear, but there is an asterisk. Take the example, for example, of Denmark. Denmark is a super wealthy country. They say, I have a non-discriminatory, very demanding environmental legislation. I apply it to the Senegalese as I apply it to Norwegians. True, but Senegalese, they will have to buy the technology, change the environmental protection, do 5,000 other things before they can compete in the Danish market. So non-discriminatory de facto means regionalization. Those who meet my standards come in and those who don't stay out. So from this perspective, depending on how high the standards are, yes, I agree with you, trade will be regionalized. Not legally, but de facto. And then again, the question is, how high are the standards in RCEP and how high they are in TPP? Now, if I move to your second point, there was an excellent, they ended up with a report by the World Bank. Michele Ruta was the lead economist, an Italian, very, very smart guy. They asked the question that you are asking on a more global scale. So the question is, do I do free trade areas to facilitate global value chains, or having set my global value chains, I then do free trade areas with those that I trade most? And no, the response is not easy. It can cut both, there are observations on both sides. It's almost impossible to respond to this question and say, one thing is clear, is with my FTA partners, and that's the main conclusion of the study, my borders become thinner. Deep trade agreements trade between them much, much more between them than with the rest of the world. And in deep trade agreements, you have both elements, FTAs and global value chains. But which gave rise to which? Difficult to see how the causality runs, as we say in economics, no? But the outcome is the same. Now, you made another from the third, a fantastic point, which I try to look at it from a slightly different perspective, but if you think I deviate, you stop me. You see, what you're saying can be seen in two ways. One way is I will look into RCEP, TPP in self-contained manner, or I will ask the question, why don't I have RCEPs in the WTO? Why instead of allowing Brazil, for example, to go and negotiate with its TPP partners in a deep between Brasilia and Washington, D.C., I don't let all those guys, you come in and you negotiate those agreements here. But whatever the outcome is, please apply it MFN. Or if you want to apply it in a non-discriminatory manner, make sure you don't impose costs on non-participants. I mean, this is the $64,000 question I think the WTO has to answer. To some extent, this is what is happening a little bit with the JSIs, the Joint Statement Initiatives, but they are issue specific. TPP is 20,000 issues under the same roof.
Sorry, and now that you mentioned on the WTO, well, we have already talked on how the CPTPP and the RCEP go beyond the WTO rules on several topics. And in addition, the information disclosed shows long-term for tariff reduction. For China, for example, market opening will take up to 36 years. Why might be the impact on negotiations on goods and rules at the WTO for agriculture, industry, and service, and also to the WTO itself?
You know, this, honestly, I can tell you very, very little about this because it's almost impossible to predict what will happen in the days to come. First of all, let me just make one observation. You didn't speak about it in your question, but I think it's quite important. Let's see how the WTO will look like after January, after the ministerial conference, first of all, because to me, this, I don't underestimate the importance of the ministerial conference. I don't expect solutions, but if we continue the way we are now, then the WTO is a moribund institution. It's not just the judiciary that is dead, it's also the legislative. And that was the point that Marina made before. I mean, you can have diversion of disputes. I take my disputes out of the WTO and I do them in Mercosur or in TPP, but this is not very important and it doesn't happen. There are very few FTA disputes. But the most important point is the point that Marina made before, that is, now, I don't negotiate trade in the WTO. I negotiated in TPP. I did one agreement in the WTO since 1995. Agreement on trade facilitation. That's all. Nothing else. So to me, you know, the duties and stuff, this is yesterday's world. I mean, duties are very low anyway. They are in places where it's difficult to negotiate them even further down. Korea will never negotiate duties on rice below the level that it is now. Europe will not negotiate some duties in agricultural products further down and so on. The key is regulatory barriers. Now, can you negotiate? Say two things if you don't mind, and then you ask me what you wish. When we discuss regulatory barriers, it's a different discussion. So think of it this way. We're back in the 50s, and you're Brazil and I'm Switzerland. And what do we negotiate? Six-digit tariffs. So you care about access to my market for milk, Parmalat, Grande Parmalat Brasileira. So I give you 5% on access for milk powder, and I care about access for Rolex watches. So you give me 5%. Fine, anybody can participate in this discussion. But now in Brazil, you've solved these problems. Your duties are quite low, and now you care about environmental goods. You don't want Brazilians to import retreaded tires, to give you an example from the real world. You don't want Brazil to import non-recyclable plastic bottles. So you start negotiating environmental standards. Now here, the negotiation is not give me five, I'll give you two, because I'm not going to reduce my environmental protection in Brazil and impose a cost on my consumers. The best I will do is rationalize my intervention. To rationalize an intervention, you and I have to have the same concerns. 164 members don't. Either we go into subsets of the WTO negotiating and we allow joint variable geometry in the WTO and the WTO becomes relevant, or we close the door and all we observe is TPPs, RSCEPs, and so on and so forth. That's my view.
Okay, so we have one more question now regarding Brazil. We hear a lot here that Brazil is getting closer to Asian countries. Our government is negotiating free trade agreements with South Korea and start discussions with Indonesia and Vietnam. Brazil is advancing also in its trade agreement network in goods and rural. For example, we finished in 2019, the Mercosur-EU agreement. In your vision, an agreement between Brazil, Mercosur, with those Asian countries, such as South Korea, will be closer to the TPP or RCEP?
I wish I was the ordine progresso negotiator, but I would definitely take the TPP as my example. And I'm very happy that Brazil does what it does, because quite frankly, there is a fantastic book by a compatriot of yours, Westerdorf, concerning, I don't know if you've seen this book, concerning the Brazilian negotiation in the Uruguay round. It is just amazing that a country like Brazil, with all this potential, was playing a defensive game during the most opening trade round ever, the Uruguay round. Finally, now Brazil starts saying, no, I'm a big guy as well. I can negotiate and I want to be part, and I want to have in trade what I should have anyway because of my size. And I think this is a very, very welcome phenomenon. I think the Brazil is, what you would describe a Western economy, there might be two or three things you might say, okay, we can discuss, fine, but it's a market economy. I mean, it has to be TPP driven. I mean, this is the type of FTAs that you should expect Brazil to sign in the future. And, of course, the other party, sorry, just half a sentence. It depends on who is on the other side. When you negotiate with Korea, you negotiate with someone who is more or less on the same wavelength. When you negotiate with Vietnam, you have to persuade them about the wavelength. Yeah.
I have another question that is not, it was not on the script, but it was provoked through your talk on JSI. And the RCEP and the TPP and other mega agreements that can come up. How do you see this environment living together? JSIs, let's suppose it goes on and the WTO gets a relevance on that. And then we have the mega agreements. That's something I just thought about it right now. Because JSIs are specific, and then you have specificities in the agreements, in the chapters, and you would have to cope with those rules. I think it's manageable, but I don't know. Do you have thoughts on how this could go on?
We did with Bernard Hookman three papers in a row asking exactly this question. I mean, the first question is why, which we discussed, and the second and third paper were about how do you make it happen? And if you wish, template is to borrow from a little bit from the European Union and a little bit from international relations theory. It's two sentences, no, I won't take too much of your time. The European Union is 27 countries. They're not homogeneous totally, but much more homogeneous than the WTO. The poorer European states, Bulgaria, Romania, are $12,000 per capita income countries. In the WTO, the poorest are $400 per capita income gun, no? And still, they have variable geometry. They allow for what they call enhanced cooperation. Now, what is the key? And that's where international relations comes into play. Don't impose undue costs on non-participants. That's which could be a matter of negotiation as well. We might agree that we allow Brazil to have closer ties with Argentina, because they've been living together for 300 years, and this might be bad maybe for trade with Chile, but we'll reduce our MFN duties so Chile can profit somewhere else. You can pay compensation in different ways. But the key is, if in the EU they allow for variable geometry, how on earth can we say we won't do it in the WTO? And you know what I find very surprising? You go back in history, in the 1970s, none of us was even born, during the Tokyo round. During the Tokyo round, they had variable geometry. During the Kennedy round, they had variable geometry. Suddenly comes this idea, maybe because they thought the world had become liberal, Berlin Wall fell, and so on and so forth, we're all on the same page. But we are not. And we should not repeat the same mistake. Now we know we're not all on the same page. So if we want the, and I do believe a lot in the WTO, I think we should have a multilateral home, not of deep, even of shallow integration, but we should allow subsets to go further to the extent we manage the negative external effects of variable geometry. That's my sentence.
Thank you, Petros. It was excellent to have your thoughts on that. I think it was a very interesting interview. Carolina, do you have any inputs for Petros? I would like to leave you with a final remark, if you'd like, Petros. For our talk, if you have like a positive message for our multilateralism or a short reflection, and then I'm going to thank you again.
The message is you should all come to New York to visit me. That's the positive. But I am very happy that there are people like you who do what you do, because unfortunately for years, all this idea of WTO and how important the multilateral house is, unfortunately, nobody was working on it. And the WTO did an imperfect job in this respect. Governments did an even more imperfect job. And thanks to people like you and the kind of initiatives you undertake, the discussion on WTO has taken a new breath. Obrigadissimo.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Really nice.
Até já.
This was WITCAST, the podcast of the Women Inside Trade Network. I hope you enjoyed our talk and keep following us at www.womeninsidetrade.com.